you guys wrote. In verses 1 through 3, maybe you wrote something like this. Why might he tell them something they already knew? It's because it's very important, or he thought they might forget. Did you guys have anything similar or something different? Similar? Okay. How about the next one? Who told Asaph and his audience, who told them the stories that he was about to repeat? Their fathers, yeah. So it's like our fathers told us, and now we're telling you again. Now, 4 and 5, I think, are very, very interesting verses. What types of stories should the audience not hide from their children? What types of stories? The works of God. Okay, the things that he's done. Anything else? Okay, his power. So maybe his attributes of who he is and also the specific things that he has done. Okay? Now, verses 4 and 5 both tell about things that God did. But there's a difference between verses 4 and 5. Who can tell me what that difference is? What is the difference between the types of things that God told them to do? Or God did? Okay.
And his protection, his provision, but he also has requirements to us as his law.
Yeah.
That's in verse 5.
You're right. That's a very important distinction. And we who are serving in any kind of children's ministry, if we're parents, if we're teachers, whatever we do, we want to remember those two things. That we need to teach the children about who God is, about the things that he's done. And we need to teach them, how does God want us to live? Because if you just have one or just have the other, it's not going to really make a life change, the life change that we're striving for. So in verses 6 and 7, there are some desired outcomes. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. What are some things that it says, what do we want our children to end up like? And then later is, what do we not want them to do? So who can tell me, what does it say we want them to be like? What's that?
Trust
in God, definitely. Yeah, trusting Him, obeying Him. It's interesting, the trusting kind of goes with parallel to verse 4, the glorious deeds of the Lord. We know He's powerful, and so therefore we know we can trust Him. But the obeying kind of goes with verse 5. He has a law, and we need to obey that. Okay, how many generations are specifically mentioned in this passage? How many? Okay, I hear 5, I hear 4. Any other things? We've got our parents. We've got us. Teach it to our children so that they can teach it to the children who are unborn. Okay, so there's 4 specifically mentioned in this passage, but the implication is, it's an ongoing thing. We need to be passing it down constantly to the next generation. And here's the thing. Sometimes you have taught things to your children. You've told them. And maybe they don't really believe you. Or they don't think it's that important. Or they might forget. Either way, if they don't believe you, or if they forget, or if they don't think it's important, they are not going to tell anybody else. Seriously. I mean, if I don't think something's true, I'm not going to go tell everybody else. I'm not going to tell my own daughter. If I forget, I certainly can't tell her. And if I don't think it's that important, I'm not going to tell her. But when we as parents, and I would also add as children's workers, when we're constantly showing the importance of God's knowing God and knowing His law, when we're constantly telling that to the kids, then it hopefully will stick in, and then when they have kids, that they will do the same thing. Last question, what does Asaph not want to happen? He's trying to avoid this. What is it? What doesn't he want to happen? Verse 8. Sure, to be stubborn and rebellious like who?
Their fathers.
Yeah, their forefathers. Now, if you were to read the rest of Psalm 78, just go ahead and flip in your Bible. Look at verses 9 all the way until the very end of the Psalm. Verses almost the end. Verses 9 through 69. Just look at how many verses there are there. All of that passage is talking about the forefathers who were rebellious and who were stubborn and the mistakes that they made by not trusting God. And so he's showing them, look, this is what can happen if you are not careful, if you are not diligent with teaching your children. And so I think that that it's important to recognize what's at stake. And if you look around at our generation, our society, our world, we have a lot of people who are rebellious, who are not following God, and it's ultimately caused by parents not teaching their children about who He is and how we should live for Him. And so I just wanted to start out with that. Let's look at the next passage. I'll read it out loud, and then I'd like you guys to chime in with some thoughts, some answers. Deuteronomy verse chapter 6, and it's verses 1 through 7. So as I read this, I want you guys to be thinking about these questions. Who is giving the commands? What should the parents do? Why should the parents do this? And when and where should the parents do this? So here we go. These are the commands, decrees, and regulations that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you. You must obey them in the land you are about to enter and occupy. And you and your children and grandchildren must fear the Lord your God as long as you live. If you obey all his decrees and commands, you will enjoy a long life. Listen closely, Israel, and be careful to obey. Then all will go well with you, and you will have many children in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord your God of your ancestors promised you. Listen, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord alone. The Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. And you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I am giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you're on the road, when you are going to bed and when you're getting up. And it continues, tie them on your hands, wear them on your forehead as reminders, write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So, this is a huge command. This is not something you accomplish in one afternoon. Okay, check it off, I'm done. This is a lifelong thing. So, first question, who is giving the commands? Look at verse 1. Who's giving the commands? The Lord gave it to Moses, and Moses giving it to the people. So, ultimately, it comes from the Lord. Good. What should the parents be doing? What should the parents do?
Teach
them to their kids. And you know what? For the longest time, that's the only answer that I knew. Because I was only looking at verses 7. Teach them to your children. But if you look before that, he's telling them that they need to be loving the Lord their God. They need to be committing themselves to him. And notice that that comes before them teaching their children. I think that is so important that any parent or any teacher, they themselves are committing themselves to God before they're leading their children. I mean, that's just true with anything. You can't have somebody be the leader if they don't have that the skill or that relationship already. So, why should the parents... Oh, yes?
Based on the verse 8, does that mean, in general speaking, most of the parents does not set a good example?
Verse 8? Tie them onto your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders?
Does that imply, in general speaking, that's why most of the parents, especially particularly mentioned father, that means the parents, especially the fathers, does not set a good example for their kids? That's why they imply these verses.
You know, I'm not sure exactly why it says it that way, but I think you're on the right track. The parents do need to set the example. And some parents, think about the parents that you know. Some parents do set a good example and some parents don't. And so it's important that we do set that example. Why should the parents do this? Obviously, it's to help their children to grow in the Lord. And then the last one, when and where should the parents do this? This, in verse 7 and 8 and 9, talks about some specific places. What are those places and times?
At home.
On the way.
Lie down.
Anywhere when you're lying down. Huh?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. And what time should they be talking to their kids about it? Anytime. And one thing in Hebrew poetry or Hebrew literature, when they say the beginning of something and the end of something, usually that represents the whole amount of time. So if you say when you lie down and when you get up, that's kind of representing, or if you were to reverse that, say when you get up and when you lie down, that would represent the whole day. When you lie down, when you get up, that kind of represents all night. It talks about on the way, it talks about at home. That pretty much covers anything. I mean, every moment of our lives, we're either at home or we're somewhere else. And so, seriously, we're on the road to somewhere. I mean, here we are at the retreat. When you guys drive back home, you're going to be on the road with your families. When you're taking them to school, when you're taking them to whatever they do, you're traveling with them. When you're at home, there's a lot of things that you can be doing there as well. So let me just read this paragraph at the bottom. I can't say it any better than this. Children's ministry needs to be a partnership with the children's parents. Children spend much more time with their families than they do with anyone else. And the best thing that the church can do for the children is to equip and encourage the parents to minister to their children throughout the week. So I want to give you a vocabulary word. Maybe you know this. Maybe you don't. But if you don't know it, I'd encourage you to write this down. The word is teachable moments. Does anybody already know what teachable moments are? Okay, it's better time. Did you say timing? Okay, what do you mean by timing?
Let's say when you do something, the kids ask you a question, that's a good opportunity for you to teach them.
Sure.
Or the kids just write and do something wrong and you just talk to them.
Exactly. It's right, it's very relevant. It's just happened or it's on their mind. Now let's say that the kids come to church and the lesson is talking about don't take revenge. Okay, fine. So they're sitting there, they're learning about it, fine. And it's going to mean a little bit to them right then. But the best time to teach them about revenge is right after somebody pushes them down. Right after somebody does something mean to them. And since the parents are with them way more than anybody else, the parents are the best people to do teachable moments. Now, teachers at church can do it too. Teachers at school can do it too. But the parents are with them the most. Now, I was even thinking, if you count up the number of hours in a day or in a week, sometimes the children are with their teacher at school, you know, maybe 7 hours a day. I'm just making this up. About 7 hours a day. How many hours are they with their parents awake? Maybe only 5 hours. Maybe only 3 or 4 hours. Okay, fine. So for that year, they're with that teacher more than with their parents. But are they with that teacher every year? No, they get a new teacher every year. But the parents are staying with them constantly, and so they are the ones who are going to have the most long-term impact. So let's turn to the back of the page, and I want to look at a couple other, some specific ways that parents are the primary spiritual leaders and that the church can partner with that. And I'm just going to read it off of here. Here's how I do my worksheets. I make this such that if you miss a session, or maybe if somebody doesn't even come at all, they could pick this up and it would mean a lot to them. So you are welcome to take extra copies of this to your friends at church, and it would be helpful to them. As opposed to if I just had a bunch of blanks that you have to be here to fill out. So here's a few more reasons to partner with parents. Number one, parents have the primary responsibility for the spiritual nurture of their children. And we talked about that in the two Bible passages. Number two, parents know their children better than anyone and can give valuable insights into their children that can help you work with them more effectively. And I've had that happen a lot, where I'm struggling with this one kid. I don't know, why is he acting this way? Why is he saying this stuff? And I go talk to the parents, and then I find out, oh, okay, that's how he's wired. Do you guys know that phrase? Okay, I know that's an American idiom, but that's how he's wired, and that's why he thinks this way, that's why he acts this way. So then I go back, and I'm teaching the same class, and I can do it more effectively. There was a time that I had a student who was really good the first year, and then the next year, he was constantly having behavior problems. And I had no idea why. He was throwing things. He was not doing his homework. All this kind of stuff. Yeah, out of the blue. I didn't ask the parents. You know what happened? I found out at the end of the school year, his parents were going through a divorce. And that has huge implications on any kid. But if I had talked to the parents, then I would have known, okay, now I know what's going on. And I would have responded to him differently. Number three, if parents are not aware of what's going on in the church ministry, they cannot support your efforts. Similarly, if they don't understand the reasoning behind something, they may be critical of it. Here's an example. I have this requirement that our children are in the same grade as they are at school. Even before they're in school, I look at their birth date, and I figure out that they're going to be starting kindergarten next year, or they're going to start kindergarten in 2 years. And so they're already with the same class of kids. Well, other churches do it differently. Other churches say, okay, when you turn 3 years old, you get to move to the three-year-old class, even if it's in the middle of the school year. Well, we don't do it that way. And one parent came up, and he was asking me, why can't my daughter move up? Because she's already a year older. She just had her birthday. And then I explained the reasoning behind it. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to do it that other way. I'm just saying, here's why our church does it this way. There were like three or four reasons of why we have it that way. It helps the children build relationships with each other. It makes it a whole lot easier for the teachers. It makes it a lot easier when you're buying curriculum so that you don't have to have the up and downs. And then also, it's just easier management in general. You don't have to think about birthdays. And then also, at the end of the year, we do a promotion ceremony where the whole class moves up at the same time. And it's an exciting time. They get a certificate. It feels like a sense of completion. So when he realized all the reasoning for that, then he was more supportive of it. So those are some reasons. Partner with parents. Here are some tips for working with parents. I've found these helpful, and I hope that you do as well. You may have other tips, and so after I read this, I'd like you to share what those might be. First of all, establish a regular communication between ministry leaders and parents. Now, it could look a lot of different ways. It could be meetings, it could be emails, it could be phone calls. Whatever it is, do it. Because if there's not that communication, look up at number three up above. If they're not aware of what's going on, they cannot support your efforts. And so what should this communication include? Well, it should have what are they learning in class and how the parents can continue this learning through the week. It should have upcoming events, ministry developments, and I would even add opportunities for parents to get involved in the ministry. There is a program called Head Start. It's a government-run preschool program. And one of the best things about the Head Start program is they require that parents be involved. They require parent hours of involvement. And as a result, the parents know exactly what's going on in their kids' school, and they're a lot more supportive, a lot more motivated. And I would encourage any church to follow that example. Now, looking back up at number one, what the first bullet? What are they learning in class? I want to hand these out. These are samples of the homework pages that we give to our children. Take stuff. We give to our children to take home. And I'm just going to ask you guys to just look over it.